Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist of Freedom Estate. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Hello, you've reached the Gist of Freedom, and this is Shelley Gaines, your host for this evening. And we have a very important show this evening, and it's regarding the boarding school that existed in 1886 that was operated by African Americans. And we have an alumnus of that school, Mr. Nathaniel Hampton, who will be discussing tonight, and he'll talk about the school and its significance and the important people that were a part of it. And we look forward to having him on the show. We also will have Mr. John Medley, who will call in and also give his feedback on the show and the significance of the school and its importance and where we are today with it, if it's open or not, and, you know, the expectations of what the school had to bring into the African-American experience, and in general how schooling then is different from schooling now. So in a few moments, we will have our gentleman with us. If you'd just like to hold on, and the program will begin shortly.
Hello, Mr. Hampton, are you on the line?
Yes, yes.
Oh, hello there. How are you?
Hello. Fine, yourself?
Fine, thank you. This is Shelley Gaines. I'm the hostess of the Gist of Freedom. And please introduce yourself.
My name is Nathaniel Hampton.
Thank you.
I am a graduate of the Manual Training Industrial School from 1944 to 1948.
Wonderful. Welcome, Mr. Hampton.
Thank you.
I'd just like to talk to you. I kind of, you know, kind of talked about the school and its significance, and I want you to kind of talk about, you know, what brought the school into existence and your experiences there, and, you know, kind of where we are today as far as educational experience back then and kind of where we are now. So I'm going to let you have the floor.
Right. Well, the Manual Training School was one of the most, schools that were never heard of until now. But this school was of significance to the black race. And one thing that they taught us was to have respect for yourself, hold your head up high, and always have high esteems so that you could become something important in life. Now, for instance, I was there, started in the ninth grade, mm-hmm. and I was in the band and the furniture shop with Mr. Cuffey, and then later on they transferred me to general mechanics, which I classes. I took up plumbing, electricity, and barbering. And I also received my license for plumbing, barbering, and I also received another license. I received a marriage license. My school sweetheart.
Okay.
And one thing about that school, it was very, very good discipline. And that was one of the main things that held that school together. We had the greatest faculty in the world. I have yet to see any faculty, male or female, that could compete with this school.
Okay, so tell us what makes that faculty so special.
Well, one thing what makes it so special, it's a typical word. They cared about you. They wanted you to succeed in life. And if you were there, the way they taught you and talked to you and guided you, you couldn't help but to be a success in life. And most of the students that graduated from that school became very prominent citizens in New Jersey and all over. We had doctors, lawyers, mechanics, teachers, and in every field that you can think of, the students would sooner or later find something that attracted them to make a living in this world.
That's wonderful. Now, as far as the makeup of the faculty, were they mostly African-American? Was it a mixture?
No, all the teachers were African-Americans.
Okay.
And I said, as I said before, they were tops. Oh, yes, it would have made a big difference because most of the black teachers seemed to be more interested in their own, and they more or less taught you in such a way that you enjoyed being in the class with any teacher on that campus. And all of them were the same. They taught you the same. They cared about you. And they definitely wanted you to be a success in life. Before I went to Bordentown, I was in a grammar school in Englishtown, New Jersey. And I left there and went to Bordentown. What happened, this gentleman from Freehold, New Jersey, named Mr. Fennison, he saw me on the street one night, and he asked me, what was I doing out that late? And I said, well, I was just coming from the movie. So what he explained to me, he said, well, I want you to come to my office Monday morning at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock, my parents and I were in his office, and the next thing I know, I was in Bordentown. And that was one of the greatest things ever happened to me. Well, I received a good grammar school teaching, but it was nothing compared to Bordentown. Certain things in the grammar school, the black kids didn't get. Now, like we had a course called Junior Business. Now, none of the black kids were in that course. And you can see why, because they only let you, well, like in slavery, they just taught you so much, and that was it. I didn't realize that until I graduated, and I said, now I wonder why none of the black kids were in junior business. Well, see, this is one of the polite ways that they have of teaching you in the integrated schools. You know, have you ever heard of socialized passing? But in Bordentown, that was not the case. When you left Bordentown, you could go either to college or go right out into the world and be a success with the teaching that you received from that school. It was outstanding.
Okay, so Mr. Hampton, I'm just curious, where did you go after Bordentown? Did you go to another university?
No. Now, that's a good question. What happened, when I graduated, I came back to a football game, and the vocation supervisor, Mr. Jones, sent one of the students to find me. They found out that I was on the campus, and he asked me to come to his office after the game. So after the game, I went over to his office, and he said, Hamp, that's what they call me, H-A-M-P, and he said, we've watched you all 3 or 4 years, and you are one of the students that we would like to have on our staff. So they hired me there as a plumber and in the electrical department and also the school barber. 450 acres.
Okay, and how many buildings?
There was about maybe 30 or 40 buildings. See, they had cottages there also for the employees and the faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made it so beautiful. And the grounds were just beautiful.
Wonderful. Did the church play a role in the curriculum?
The church, yeah, we had to go to church like 3 or 4 times a week. And that was part of the curriculum. You had to go to church service.
And was there a church on the premises, or was that outside?
Well, we had church right in the auditorium, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. And how about the maintenance of the...
We had an excellent maintenance program. The students were just like Tuskegee. The students did the maintenance to the program, to the campus and the buildings.
Oh, okay.
And like if it was something like on a roof or something like that, they would have outside contractors. But otherwise, now, like, for instance, I was in the plumbing and electric shop. Whenever we had a problem, the teacher would go, and he would instruct us what to do. And I became so good that my teacher, electric and plumbing teacher, was named the plumbing teacher was Charlie Campbell. From Tuskegee. He married the print teacher's daughter, Miss Betty Campbell, which she still lives in Bordentown. And the lecture teacher was Mr. Ulysses Washington. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the teachers there that I always admired, they could teach the trade and also do it.
Oh, great.
And they would, like, now, for instance, I was one of the most fortunate, I think. They would send me on jobs in town to, you know, test my apprenticeship. And I just picked up anything that they would teach me. I just let it sink right in. And I made a good living out of plumbing, electric, and barber. In our athletic program, we had a wonderful athletic program. We were so competitive that, now we were high school students, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. We were playing high schools. And then later on, they didn't want any parts of us. I would say we were super. So what we had to do, the school and Charlie Ray, we had to play freshman colleges. We played Cheney, Lincoln, and Virginia State, and Hampton.
Okay.
Yeah. I used to, and the thing is about the school, whenever those students from other colleges would come there, they would look at the grounds, and they said, oh, gosh, this is a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
It was. The grounds were well manicured, and it was just a beautiful place just to walk on.
So why, in your opinion, did the state take that over and then change all that? Because it sounds like it was such a breeding ground for success.
Well, personally, the school, like I was saying, the school, nobody knew about the school. And then when we started to excel in different, you know, like we would go and debate with other schools, and then we would go on choir trip. We had a wonderful choir. I have never heard a choir sing like the choir that we had under the directions of Fred Work and Mr. Charlie Higgins. And it was just a place that if you were part of it, you did your part. And it made the school so great. I don't think there's another school in the United States that could stand on the same grounds that we stood on. That's just how good the faculty and the surroundings were at that school.
And you think it stopped because of, because now, you know, it's for juvenile delinquents.
Well, see, integration. Integration helped us, and then some ways it didn't help us, you know, because they had another school in Pennsylvania called Downingtown. That closed, and that was all black. And, like, when I went to the assembly hearings, Mr. Jones said, Hamp, I want you to go to all the assembly hearings in Trenton. And when we would get up and speak, so I asked the senators and the assemblymen, why would you close a school like this, an institution of learning, when it helped so many families and their children. And they couldn't answer.
Hmm.
They were baffled, you know. And then, now, if you've ever been on that campus on May 30th, that was one of the greatest days of my life. May 30th, mm-hmm. there would be anywhere from, I would say, 500 to 2,000 people come on that ground. May 30th was like a big picnic to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as I've told John Medley, if you look at the movie, they had to be watching us, because where do they get all these pictures from? And I still think there's more pictures of that school in Trenton stored in some boxes in some basement somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because the film that they made of the school, it was the pictures were like back in the 20s and in the 40s. But nothing in the 50s, and the school was still in existence. Now, the last big ceremony that we had there was the monument ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And Trenton Paper was there.
Mm-hmm.
They had a camera. So after the ceremony was over, I asked the gentleman on the camera, I said, would it be possible to get a film? He said, yes. So I called him about a couple weeks later. They couldn't find it.
Really?
Yeah, they couldn't find it. They had no record of it, you know. Now, there must be a record of it somewhere, you know. And John Medley, he's done a lot of research work in that school, you know,
mm-hmm.
for the exhibits that we have. When we have our picnic every last Saturday in July, how that became about was...
Okay.
I was on the campus one day, and Mayor Whitman, you remember the Governor Whitman? She was on the campus, and she sent the state trooper to find me because I was working there at the time, and she wanted me to take her around the campus. So I did. I knew all the buildings, pipelines, electric lines, water lines, and all that. And
mm-hmm.
she asked me, why did the school close? So mm-hmm. I told her, I said, Governor, they said they couldn't integrate it. And here's the words that she repeated. She said, that wouldn't stand up in court now. Because our door, like I told them in the Senate,
mm-hmm.
our doors were open to everybody. Have you ever heard tell of a black school being segregated? think about it. We always had our doors open. Anybody could come.
Uh-huh.
But it was the white schools that were segregated.
Wow.
And that's why when they used that as an excuse, I did not go for that. I said, now, I think we had two white students came there, but they didn't stay, you know. But if we had a recruiting program like they did for the blacks, it probably would have been integrated. I think integration would have kept that school open, you know what I mean?
Okay, but do you think they should have had more outreach to white students to join that school?
Yeah,
and maybe it would have kept.
That's right. I think they should have. Because it was like they would say, well, if the white students didn't want to come there, that was their misfortune.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I know I appreciate everything that I earned from that school and all the other students. Because we had a student named Henry Daniels. They just honored him in Newark last week.
Oh,
and then we
what
had another student from Asbury Park,
mm-hmm.
Donnie Covington. He became a judge, Raymond Basie. And then there were so many students that went on to higher things in life because of our faculty.
Great. So, and you also have a reunion every year. You had mentioned
that. Yeah, we have a reunion at the last Saturday in July on the campus. Well, Governor Whitman, she gave us, when I asked her could we have the picnic on the campus, she said, I don't see why not. And she said, I'll put you in touch with one of my staff. And we went on from there. You know,
okay,
we had the couple named Lionel, like I said, Lionel and Betty Hunter. They sort of took it upon their own to push it and get us reorganized again.
Okay.
Because we had an alumni, you know, shortly after the school closed, but it sort of, you know, faded. you know.
Okay. I believe we have someone on the line.
Yes.
Yes. This is Art Syme.
Hey, Syme. How you doing?
Hamp. Yes, Ms. Gaines.
Yes, I'm here. Go ahead with your question, sir.
Oh, well, no, I just wanted to get involved with the conversation because, I mean, I spent 8th through 12th grades there and went on to other things. And you're speaking of the reunion, which is coming up the 27th, and I'm the chairman of the reunion for this year.
Okay, so tell us about the reunion and, you know, the actual date and who can come and give us some insight.
Okay, the reunion, this last year was our 20th year, and it was essentially a rainout, and that was the first time ever a rainout. So this year it is going to be the last Saturday in the month, and we also have, I mean, I haven't sent this word out yet. I'll be corresponding with the social club members and the students and the people that went to the school in general. A large, large list will go out announcing the reunion, giving some background on it, information. And I have selected a rain date, which will be the following Saturday, which will be August the 3rd, just in case. So if it rains, that'll be an automatic date. We do a number of things on the campus. As Hamp mentioned, John Medley on the porch of one of the buildings, dormitories, male dormitories, that faces the area where we will be enjoying ourselves, he puts on a rather fantastic display of memorabilia, yearbooks, state documents, photographs, all kinds of things about the school going way back to its inception, which will be very, very helpful. Now, one thing we're going to do that will be quite outstanding, I believe, and I'm in the process of putting this together, the documentary that Hamp mentioned. I'm calling him Hamp because that's what we call him.
Okay,
Daniel.
No problem.
Nat. The idea came up, I thought of putting up a big screen on the campus to show the documentary, but I'm informed that because it will be out in the light, a big screen won't work. So I think what we will have is two very large screen TVs placed strategically on the campus, on our reunion areas, and have them running concurrently, but showing two different times during that day so that people can get some of the background and enjoy. Those that went there can enjoy the remembrances, and those that did not attend the school will learn more about it besides being on the campus itself at the reunion. And, of course, there we sell food, snacks, and hot dogs, hamburgers, and a number of things, drinks, soft drinks, and for purchase. And that's for raising funds for the social club and also to give people something to eat while they're there. So, we'll get underway about 12 noon and end up about 6. Before we end, we form a large circle of members. And we see the alma mater. It's a moving thing.
Wonderful.
Now, let me go quickly to the monument. It took us close to 10 years to get that monument built. And, of course, as Ham said, it was paid for by the state. But I was the chairman of the committee to put the monument together, and the artist, very fine sculptress, Lauren Ewing from New York. She was the one we selected through the State Council of the Arts process. We interviewed and looked at the work of about, I think it must have been about 8 or 10 people that submitted their work for our review. And we, interestingly enough, when we made our vote, we unanimously selected Lauren's work. And so there the diamond stands, as it's in the form of a diamond made of black granite from Zimbabwe. And on top of that diamond, there is a model of the campus with all of its buildings done in bronze. It sits in the middle of a circular concrete pad with four arc benches made of the same stone from Zimbabwe, and the front edge of the four stones is the engraved, the last stanza of our alma mater. Now, also on that concrete pad are four very attractive modern lights standing, which come on at dusk. So anyone can go there and see this this monument. In addition, on the facets, the eight facets around the diamond, on the, at its top, are memories from members of the institution from way back. We send our correspondence to people asking them, give us in one or two sentences your memory. And that all that is engraved. We selected the ones we could put on the monument, engraved part in it, and keep the memory. So the whole process of the monument and the union is to keep the memory and the legacy of our school alive. It was a unique institution called, it was called the Tuskegee of the North.
Right.
And many, Paul Robeson, Albert Einstein, Marian Anderson, many major people came and lectured at, on that campus. So it was unique in that we got an academic and trade education.
Okay.
So,
and you're,
I mean, that's kind of the gist of it.
Okay. So your experience along with Mr. Hampton, I can see just – since accolades about his experience there, I guess yours was the same from your passion that you just talked about earlier.
Was that a question you asked?
Yeah, my question is, what was your experience at the school since you were so passionate about describing the monument? And
my experience was quite wonderful in retrospect. And when I look back, I never once, my 5 years there, had a desire to have not attended the school. Now, naturally, there were some students that were there by their parents, and they weren't delinquents, by the way, but they just didn't like being away from home. Well, I mentioned delinquents because there have been some people, when we were taking the documentary around, explaining it, showing it, and talking about the school, there were people that thought that young folk were sent there because they were not good kids, they're bad kids.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing further from the truth. We weren't there because we were delinquents or bad or troubled kids. We went there because it was a good thing. My mother raised my sister and I by herself, and when a student that was my sister's friend that was at school maybe a couple of years ahead of her went to Arch Church in Elizabeth, New Jersey, she said that, well, she was in the school, and my sister said, well, she wanted to go to the school. So my mother said to her, well, she could go. Well, I think a couple of weeks later, one of the girl's name, Isola Bolden, her brother came home, and he wore his, we had uniforms, military-type uniforms for the boys. He came home to church on a Sunday, and he has uniform on. And I looked at a uniform, and I said, whoa, boy, that's what they wear at that school. I wanted to go. Oh, so my mother said I could go.
For the uniform.
It was kind of funny reason to go, but anyhow, I went, and the military training, excellent for us, because 13, 14, 15-year-old kids needed some discipline, some, you know, guidance. That's what they gave us, the boys.
Great.
So that helped to make it a good thing. We lived in a dormitory. We had roommates. We had peace. There was never really any difficulty. There was no fighting and cursing and using bad language or doing things that were against each other or against society was not tolerated. And for the boys, if you did something that was wrong, for instance, you came with the class late or you went to meals, you had to march over to our meals, the dining hall, and if you came late, then you got what was called a tour, which meant an hour marching on a line with a musket, a rifle on your shoulder, and nobody wanted to do that. So you avoided wrong things by doing the right thing. Gave us an opportunity to learn how to get along with people. We had excellent teachers, and I do mean excellent. Our teachers were highly educated. They not only brought the education to us, they brought us a sense of blackness without talking about blackness.
Okay.
Brought to us a sense of caring for us kids that are away from our homes. They taught us how to live, how to be citizens. Our education, you could academically, you could pursue the general course or the college course. If you were so inclined to go on to college after that academic education, you were prepared to do that. You took different courses that prepared you for that. But we went to academic half a day and trade half a day, 5 days a week. At the end of, you could, for the girls had a study, home economics, beauty culture, seams, I think it was called seamstress, clothes making. The boys had a much larger spread of trades. We could study carpentry, woodworking, plumbing, electricity, auto mechanics, landscaping and gardening.
Painting.
Was that?
Painting.
Painting, yes. I'm sorry. Painting. And also, if you were in the, studying painting, you also, most of the students in painting studied an instrument. And the band students came under that same instructor. Forget his name.
Cuffy.
Mr. Cuffy.
Mr. Cuffy, right. So, in the first year, you could study. You studied what's called pre-vocational. I was under Mr. Beam, and you studied woodworking of various kinds, working with metal. In other words, it was a time when you chose. By the end of that year, you chose which trade you were going to go into. This is the boys, and it was a wonderful. And I'm not just saying it's because I went there or to impress anyone. I am trying to impress and let people know there how proud we are having gone to such an institution. It was far, in my view, it was far, far beyond what students were learning in the public school. You took a kid that was 13 years old. I called Bill Skank before this call, and I don't know if he's going to join or not.
I'm on.
Yes, I finished Bordentown with the certificate in carpentry, and worked as a carpenter a couple of the summers during that, while I was in. But I went on from Bordentown to Howard University and pursued a Bachelor of Architecture degree, which I did in two segments. I had to drop out for a while. My mother passed, and after getting the Bachelor of Architecture, a few years later, I went to University of Michigan and attained a Doctor of Architecture degree. And following that, I went down to Southern University and became the Dean of the School of Architecture at Southern University for 9 years. And I left there and came back to New York and became an Assistant Commissioner. The New York City Department of General Services, under one of my former students, who was the commissioner. So I did that for 4 years, and then went on to Empire State College in the New York City CUNY system as assistant dean and director of the corporate college program, which was part of Verizon college program, and retired from that in 2002. So Bordentown well prepared me academically and in terms of my trade.
That's wonderful. So I just wanted to mention that again, the reunion, which is coming up. I want to talk about. I want you all to give those dates again. So if there are people listening and they want to, they can. Is it open to the public or just alumnus?
No, the public.
To students, whether you graduated or not, and it's open to the public. We want people to really come. On a month before the reunion, which the reunion is the 27th of July, we will send out correspondence, a large mailing, and then in an effort to get as many people as we can this year, we'll send out a second mailing probably 2 weeks before the reunion, kind of as a reminder. People will be able to bring their picnic lunches if they like, or they can buy from whatever we have. We'll have the usual kind of picnic fare, hamburgers, hot dogs, and cake, maybe some ice cream, things like that, and soft. And the state, the superintendent on the campus there, we still call it the campus even though it is in our campus, has sanctioned our use of the campus again, and this will be the 21st year. And we have rest facilities, porta-johns, and of course, water and all the things you need. People can bring their own chairs, their beach chairs, or picnic chairs and tables if they want. We have some. And it'll just it's a great thing. It's a wonderful time to come and join with old friends and people you haven't seen in many, many years. So we strongly encourage as many people that want to come, come.
Okay. So now, are any of the buildings open for viewing on the campus there, or?
No, that's one of the difficulties, but in a way it's good because people will see that this school existed for a long time and has been closed for a long time. The buildings are sitting and going fallow. Their paint is peeling. Only a few buildings. We had male dormitories, two female dormitories, and the academic building, which is the main academic learning. Which when you enter what used to be a gate, at the far end, straight ahead was what was called the academic building. That building is sitting there peeling with paint. It's been like that since 1955. Well, it's been going to waste since 1955, which is, what is that, 60-some years ago. But people can come and see, and I'd like to just throw one thing else out on the table.
Okay.
There have been people, alums, who talk about opening the campus again. Now, my view, as an alumnus and as an educator and an architect, I believe that those desires are rooted primarily in the emotions of having attended the school and knowing that it's closed, and also knowing that such a school would be so wonderful and so it's so needed today. But to talk about taking the school back onto that campus would cost millions beyond that which we can think of, because all those buildings need renovating. They're full of asbestos, plus the fact that the state is not interested in that, and the state owns the campus and the buildings and everything there. That is kind of a dream. Now, surely would not be an all-black school.
Yeah,
that's just out of the question.
Right.
And I don't know, and I'm sure that Hamp and Medley and Bill Skank would agree to that, because we know this is a different day, a different time. It wouldn't be that.
When the school was founded, it was founded for colored youth. That was the inscription on the gate as you approached coming into the school. On the gate, the Bordentown Manual Training and Industrial School for Colored Youth.
Right.
That was the inscription. Just revised, but not. It won't be for black people. It will be for people. Period.
You're on the line, sir. If you'd like to make a comment regarding the conversation.
I'm John Medley. I attended the school in 1950 to 54.
Okay.
The school for about a 70-year period. When Americans cared little about the education of African-Americans and discrimination was law and custom, the Bordentown School was an educational utopia, an incubator for black intellect.
Bordentown taught the values, discipline, and life skills to generations of black children and adults. The school was closed in 1965 in the wake of the Supreme Court Brown versus Board of Education decision. What was lost and what was gained in the march toward integration and equality. The school, as far as I know and experience, it was a boarding school you had to pay to go there. There were some students who weren't that well off that qualified to go there. Their tuition was picked up by the county or the representative of where they lived at. I took the test and passed in Pennsmith. That was putting up the ventilation system in the aircraft carrier. So that was a good advantage and helpful of the Bordentown School in training.
Great. So it sounds like this Bordentown School was a wonderful experience for all, and we have a fabulous reunion planned. And I just want to thank you all for your time. Is there any closing remarks that any of you would like to make regarding the school and your experience?
Yes, I have one. I want to thank you, Leslie, for showing interest in the school, because this is going to brighten the minds and the thoughts of that school. And it's a time now when we need a school like that. You know, you wouldn't have so many of these kids in correctional institutions. Does the school taught you to have better things to do in life than to run up and down the street, you know? Make use of yourself. That's why I said we had the greatest faculty in the United States. As Symes mentioned, and Medley and Bill and I were there together, and
okay.
It was just so. It was not only a school, but you enjoyed just being part of it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, but let me mention something. John Medley hit on it. Here was an institution that took 400 and some students per year and gave us young folk. Black kids. We weren't called black then. We were called Negroes. But everyone, I'd like for everyone to consider this. Here we were. They're getting an education, an academic education, and a trade. So you could not do either one. You could do Booker T, or you could do Boyce. All right.
Mm-hmm.
After the school was there from 1886 to 1955, it closed and then turned into a place for kids that were wayward. It's a place now for under the Department of Corrections. It's just so contrary to what it was. They took hallowed ground, learning by black who. It was the only school in the whole region of the country, other than the one down in Virginia, that young folks of our ilk could get an education. And they turned it into a place for incarceration, which
yeah.
speaks of what the is now.
Relative.
It's just a shame.
I agree. But I don't think that's going to change in any way, gentlemen. I mean, right? There's nothing we can do about that. You have to start anew somewhere else, correct?
Well, I think it could be changed if your politicians and, well, it would have to start at your home, the churches, and the politicians. We need schools like that to teach the students a way of life and to become something valuable to the country. Just don't be somebody just stand up every day and do nothing. Because like Symes and the others, like Symes and Medley and Bill, most of the graduates from that school did very well in life. Thank you.
Okay. And I'm just trying to figure out, too, how did you all get, how were you all able to have church in school? And so it was a public school.
We had a chapel.
I'll answer that. We had to do at we had to go to church like Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and on Sundays. It was part of the curriculum. That was part of the teaching. You know, you just don't go to school and forget, you know, about church. Mostly all the students that were there went to church when they were home. So that was part of your duties to go to church. You had to go to church and sit up straight and listen. And we had some very good speakers. I remember one time myself I met, you ever heard of W.C. Handy?
Yes.
Of course. Well, I met him personally. And, we had numerous speakers come there. And it just made you feel like you were somebody. Not just anybody, but somebody.
Let me say that we church was, it wasn't called church. Going
it was
to
called chapel.
Chapel. On Sunday. And that there's a building there that has three major spaces. One is the chapel, which was the closest to the campus proper. And mm-hmm. and the next connection to that was through a kind of corridor was the gym.
The gym. And
then the next was
the
dining hall. Well, that building, you go there and look at it now, and it'll breaks your heart because it's in such disrepair. But in the chapel, we had our service on Sunday, but it was non-denominational.
Oh,
It wasn't Baptist or Catholic or Episcopal or Muslim or it was non-denominational where we got spiritual. Coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was respectful, highly respectful, highly regarded. I don't know that I never heard of a student not wanting to go to chapel. So whether you were religious or not, that was where you went on Sunday for the service. And there wasn't a preacher or a minister. It wasn't run like church, quote-unquote church. But it was a warm kind of gathering of students and faculty, and it brought us together, helped to bring us together, and prepared you for the week. And after that, in the afternoon, we could socialize out on the campus together, boys and girls and family members, mothers, fathers that came up to see you on that Sunday. It was kind of an open, free gathering. And I might add that. The campus proper, a large green, was a separated boys' side of the campus from the girls' side of the campus.
Okay.
Those two areas were sacred. A boys' old building, which was for the 8th and 9th grades, boys' new building was the 10th through 12th grades, and the old or new didn't mean the condition of the buildings is just when they were built. The girls had the same thing on their side.
Okay.
And there were, we had, on the social side, we had functions on Friday night, Saturday night. We had different clubs on the campus that would sponsor a dance. And we could go to the dance, and some faculty members would serve as chaperones. And we had the music playing. And dancing and an outlet, that kind of social outlet that young people had to have. So I mean, that it was home away from home.
And you had camaraderie.
That's right, camaraderie.
Great. Great. So I guess I want to thank you all for just your time and talking about your wonderful school. I don't know if you want to close this segment by singing your alma mater. I'm waiting, gentlemen. You took singing. You can do everything.
Have a better suggestion.
What's that?
And that is that everybody within earshot of this program, and follow up with what Ham said, thank you so much for doing this. But my better suggestion is come to the reunion where we'll gather in a big, huge circle and we'll sing it. They'll hear us sing it then.
Okay, sounds great, gentlemen. Thank you so much. If you'd like to see more photographs regarding the school, they're on the Leslie Gist's website, the Gist of Freedom, on Blog Talk Radio. You can go and take a look at pictures of this wonderful school. And I just want to thank you all again. I'm going to mention the names, Art Stein, Bill Stank, Mr. Hampton, and Mr. Medley. Thank you so much. There's also YouTube interviews regarding this school and the wonderful experience that was provided to the general population, the general black population back then. Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. This is Shelley Gaines for the Gist of Freedom. Enjoy your evening.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.